Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we're going to be talking about behavior change and what that means for saving animals. And with me today is Angela Tagg, our guest, and Jesse Lowry. Jesse, why don't you get today's show started?
Thanks, Ryan, and welcome, Angela. Excited to have you with us today.
Hi again.
And I'm Jesse Lowry, Director of Conservation and Research, and I always like to take the first moment of this show and set the stage and talk about the role of a modern zoo in saving animals in the wild. The mission of Blank Park Zoo is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And what that means to me is that we are a window to the wild, a place where we invite the community to come in and have a fun, affordable day out. We've surveyed our audience. We know that's what they're looking for, is a fun, family-friendly day at the zoo. But while they're here, we want to educate them on the wild counterparts of the animals that we have here at the zoo and the threats that they're facing in the wild. But more importantly, we want to educate them and inspire them to take action to save wildlife. And that's where the theme of today's show, behavior change, really comes in as a very important and valuable tool. But we help to save wildlife here at Blank Park Zoo in many ways. We try to be as green as we possibly can in our day-to-day operations, as well as encourage our audience to be as green as possible. Because we know now that what we consume and our use of plastic and pollution in the environment, the ocean, all of these have a direct impact on wildlife. And the use of single-use plastics is becoming actually a number one threat to wildlife. So we'll touch on that a little bit later in this program as well. We financially support field organizations. Those are the people and the organizations out on the front lines in the wild, saving the wild counterparts of the animals that we have here at the zoo. We support Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia, Chimpanzee Sanctuary and Wildlife Conservation Trust in Uganda, Hornbill Research Foundation in Thailand, Snow Leopard Trust in Mongolia, and many more. And really, the moral of this story is that every time you visit Blank Park Zoo, you are also helping to save animals in the wild, because a portion of every dollar that we make goes to these projects and many more. We've only just skimmed the surface with this quick little summary. And it also means that every staff member at Blank Park Zoo, no matter their role, if they're an educator, a zookeeper, a vet, someone who works in the office, someone who works maintaining our grounds, we are all helping to save animals in the wild as well, because we're helping to make the zoo successful. So you can think about that on your next visit to the zoo, that just by visiting the zoo, you're taking this conservation action. And that is really, you know, what we want to talk about today, Ryan, at during our show is how do we get people to take conservation actions? And when you think about wildlife conservation and endangered animals and climate change and all of these big issues, some people feel hopeless and feel like they can't do anything to help. But we're here to tell you that it's actually pretty easy. And there's a lot of things that we can do in our own life that maybe is a small action with a big impact. And so, Ryan, I'm glad that you ran into my friend, Amiel Dewan of Impact by Design at a conference. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the conference that you were at, and then we can hear what Amiel had to say.
Well, yeah, a couple weeks ago, I attended the Association of Zoos and Aquariums annual conference in Seattle, and I was able to get several interviews, and we played one before, and we'll have more in upcoming shows. But Amiel talked about behavior change in her business, how she helps people, consults with people to develop conservation programs for their zoo or their organization to inspire that behavior change. And as we'll talk about in the show today, it's much better to get people to think that changing the behavior is doing a good thing rather than forcing a behavior change. So I guess we're going to listen to the interview now with Amiel Dewan, and Amiel is going to talk about behavior change.
So when I'm talking about behavior change, I'm not talking about animals, like how we try to train our dogs and get them to do things differently. I'm really thinking about getting into the minds of people and what they care about and what motivates them to action. So from a conservation perspective, Impact by Design supports nonprofits, zoos, aquariums, animal welfare, and conservation organizations across the globe to really think about how we can help inspire people to do better for animals and for people, how we can get them to think differently about how their actions affect animals and the environment on the planet, and then what are some of the tools that these organizations can use to really help mobilize people and inspire them to do good things for people and animals.
Take us through maybe an example of how you put this into action.
Yeah. So we do a lot of training and capacity building for organizations. What we really like to do is help them think about what is their specific conservation vision? What do they really want to do for animals? And how do people play a role in that conservation? So what we do is walk them through a series of steps to help them understand what data do they need to collect in order to really get inside the heads of people and the communities that they care about. What are the specific behaviors they hope to shift that would be powerful and beneficial for animals and for people or the environment? And then what are the specific tools that they need to apply in order to be able to make that kind of an impact? So some of the things that we find, for example, is that people may be less motivated by knowledge and awareness than they are about something that's inspiring or emotional or hits close to home. We find that, you know, people's families and what they care about and their values, whether or not their religion or sports or people that influence them in a really meaningful and powerful emotional way, are a much more powerful tool in some cases than just helping them understand what the issues are. So we really seek to find and talk to people about what really motivates them, what they really care about, and then work with those key inspiring leaders to help get the message out about what those individuals can do for animals and for people.
Do you have a case study or an example of how you've put this into action?
Yeah, sure. So we work with one organization in Africa that's primarily focused on great apes. And what they're really interested in is reducing the amount of hunting that's going on for chimpanzees and for gorillas for the bushmeat trade. So we worked with that organization really closely to really understand what's going on in those communities, why people are attracted to that kind of bushmeat, but also some of the reasons why that might not be a desirable behavior for folks. So, for example, the bushmeat trade for women is actually a really smelly, messy business. So what we like to do is get in, figure that out, and then work with that organization to provide an alternative. So helping those women have another activity, like raising chickens or selling products or artisan or fair-related products on a market in a way that allows them to not have to sell bushmeat and actually benefit in a variety of different ways of changing their behavior, not sell the bushmeat, and then have a much nicer, healthier, and productive job that works for them.
Okay, speaking of behavior change, tell our audience one thing that people can do for conservation.
So, you know, every day we're faced with decisions, and I think oftentimes people get really overwhelmed with the complexity of things like climate change and all of the various problems. But it is really true that one small action can lead to a lot of significant change for animals and for the environment. I think that if people can skip the straw, for example, and choose to take that step in their life to not use plastic straws, that's just one quick step towards a long-term reduction of plastic that influence marine animals, for example. That's one super quick thing that people can do really easily that allows them to make a difference right away. But I would also say, you know, track your policy change and what your legislators are doing as it relates to the animals that you care about, and let them know how you feel about what's going on in the environment and what you care about as it relates to animals, so that they know that your passion and your commitment to their leadership has something to do with the environment and with animals, so that they make good decisions on policy.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Nice to meet you.
Okay, we are back here in the studio at Blank Park Zoo, and we just heard from Amiel Dewan of Impact by Design. Ryan ran into her at the Association of Zoos and Aquariums annual conference. And as you just heard, Amiel is an expert, a leader in the field of behavior change. And she is a colleague of mine. I heard first about behavior change probably now 4 or 5 years ago. And I'm just really excited about this concept or this tool and how it's a data-driven tool to make sure that our programs are as effective as possible. And it was funny, the first time I heard about behavior change, I thought, back about the projects that we do here at the zoo. And, you know, we really did get a lot of them right, but some I could immediately see holes in the programs and immediately see ways that we could make them better. And so, you know, just to review, that what I really took away from what Amiel said is that behavior change, you just really work to find out what people care about and what motivates them to action. And that way you can find out what the best ways are to inspire people to take action. And of course, when we're talking about saving animals with Blank Park Zoo, we want to inspire people to take action to save wildlife. But behavior change can be used in many different fashions. And really, some of the people who are the best at it are marketers. Coca-Cola and other big products are really good at this, getting us to use their products, to buy their mm-hmm. products. And so if Coca-Cola can do it, why can't we do it too? Yeah. And that's really what is exciting about behavior change. And so when we think about these threats that are facing wildlife, you know, most of them are anthropogenic, are human caused. And so I am here to say today, and I truly believe this, if we are the cause of it, we can also be the solution of it. And it's not just fluff. It really can help. Small changes in everybody's lives can really lead to a bigger impact. And, you know, I may have mentioned before, but Blank Park Zoo, we have 500,000 people in our audience. And so what a fantastic, you know, platform that we have to inspire. A small action taken by 500,000 people, well, you can tell that even in this community, that's going to add up to a big change. And that is really our strong suit as a zoo. And for zoos, no matter what their size, our audience is families and kids and schools. So we want to make sure that they know that each of them matters and what they do really matters. So Amiel said again that she wanted organizations to think about what is their conservation vision. And I really think that is the conservation vision of Blank Park Zoo. We want to mobilize the public to take action, and we want them to know that all of their actions matter. And I know that Angela and Ryan, working here at the zoo, you know, thinking about conservation, that we are a conservation organization, we've all made some changes, and some of them have been easier than others. But, you know, the last couple years, I've tried to reduce my use of single-use plastic, tried to be really conscious about when we drive the car and how far we're driving the car. Angela, what are a couple of the things that you have worked on over the past couple years?
Yeah, truly. I thought I was pretty good in this realm before I started working at the zoo, but now I find myself thinking almost daily about what's my next thing. So it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like a challenge for myself. It's very intrinsic as well. So I can honestly say in the last 3 years, my household, as a household, we have probably only brought home about 20 plastic bags through shopping. Otherwise, our new goal is that if we go shopping and forget our reusables, then we only buy what we can carry. I have not used a plastic straw in about 2 years, and that was actually a big thing for me because this is a little personal, but I do have some dental work that I've always used straws, and so just replacing plastic straws with a reusable metal straw or a reusable, they make glass straws or bamboo straws. And then my newest one in trying to reduce plastic in my household is I am trying out shampoo bars instead of bottled shampoo right now to see if I like using those.
That's really fantastic, Angela. And you'll have to let me know how those shampoo bars work out. I'm going to try them next.
I've never heard of this before.
See, yeah. You
this
learned
something.
New. Yeah. Newish. New old, you know, it's how people used to do it, right? So a lot of this is throwback ideas.
Exactly. Ryan, what are you and your family doing?
I think the biggest thing I do is I love drinking water from a bottle, right? Or just drinking any beverage. So I used to drink a lot of pop, and then I wanted to get away from pop, and so I started drinking water. So I just drank water from the bottle because that helped me just replace the pop. Well, now I'm replacing that bottle with, you know, my biking bottle.
That
excellent.
Is awesome.
Right, awesome. Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Have you ever thought about how many bottles that may have saved you over or saved?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a cost saving things too, because I just fill it up out of the fountain
yeah,
rather than,
right?
put $2 in a machine. So.
So many of these green actions are cost saving, yeah. whether you're an individual or a business. And that is such a great point. You know, going back to what Amiel was talking about, like the nuts and bolts of behavior change, I thought we could go through the nuts and bolts a little bit and then take a few of the projects that we do here at Blank Park Zoo and kind of deconstruct them to show how we are using the tool of behavior change. And so she talked about basically three things. You need to do some data collection. Second, you need to really define what behavior you want to shift. And lastly, you need to talk about really what challenges need to be overcome. So I'll just go ahead and start with our Plant Grow Fly Pollinator Conservation Program because it fits into this really mm-hmm. well. And this is actually the program I was mentioning earlier. I first learned about behavior change and I immediately, in my own mind, was just running through the Plant Grow Fly project and wondering, did we do it right? And we actually did. But like I said, the behavior change concept has been really valuable as we create more projects and new projects here at the zoo. And so when we're thinking about data collection for Plant Grow Fly, well, what we're trying to do is encourage people to plant native plants. Native plants are the foundation for the entire ecosystem. They evolve to be specifically adapted for our soil type and our precipitation and to be really nutritious for native pollinators. And so when we think about, you know, what we need to know where people live. What kind of, are they planting plants? Do they have gardens already? What kind of plants are they planting? Do they live in a house? Do they live in an apartment? Are they in a town? Are they in a rural area? And so what behavior do we want to shift? Well, we want them to plant native plants. Mm-hmm. And so that is exactly the behavior shift. So instead of planting, some would say more traditional, but I would say more exotic plants like tulips and rose bushes, we want them to go ahead and pick a different plant at the plant store and grow those. And so what challenges would need to be overcome with planting native plants? Well, it's actually a complete shift of mindset from, big air quotes, traditional gardening. They grow differently. A lot of them are kind of aggressive. If you want to plant common milkweed, for example, which of course we know is the host plant of the monarch butterfly and is very needed. Common milkweed is the milkweed that you see in the ditches. And I say it's like putting a bowl in a china shop if you want to put it into your backyard garden. It's aggressive, it spreads easily, and people just aren't used to that and they don't know how to handle that. Before I move on, by the way, butterfly weed behaves very well in urban gardens, and mm-hmm. that is a great milkweed plant to put in your garden. But we're just trying to overcome those challenges. Native plants are sometimes more expensive. Sometimes they're a little bit harder to find. People don't know how they grow. And so that is how we have designed Plant Grow Fly, to give them all of these resources so they know what plants to put in the garden and where to get them, how much they cost, and things like that. And so basically we're trying to overcome these challenges to make it easier for them to do this conservation action of planting a butterfly garden. And through all of this, of these tools, we've been pretty successful. We are up to almost 1,200 butterfly gardens that have been registered throughout the state of Iowa and the Midwest, and we're really helping to plant that corridor of native plants that our pollinators need, like bees and like the monarch butterfly. And so, you know, when we were thinking about some projects here at the zoo, Angela, what other project here do you think that we could highlight using the tool of behavior change?
Yeah, most definitely. We are ramping up. We've been at it for about a year with our Hunters Leading the Way campaign, and that's encouraging hunters to use non-lead ammunition. And that most definitely is one that we definitely needed to kind of step back a little bit. We knew it was an issue, but step back, look at the data. How many people know that it's an issue for our raptors and other wildlife for lead ammunition to be in the environment? Find out the number of people who understand it versus don't understand it, get that good data. And then just like what you stated, help remove those barriers. In other words, what tools do we need to give that community to be able to be successful at that action change?
I think that's a wonderful example. And let's back up just for a moment and kind of, you know, unpack the issue just for a moment for listeners who aren't really familiar. So hunting in Iowa, especially deer hunting in Iowa, is a strong conservation activity. Obviously, there's an overpopulation of deer. And if we want to conserve any type of habitat, like for pollinators, like we were just speaking of, we need to make sure that we manage that population. Of course, there's lots of collisions with vehicles as well. And, you know, hunters and anglers are some of the original conservationists that really are out there in the land using the natural resources, hunting deer, you know, to bring home, to put on the dinner table. But a lot of the hunting, most popular hunting in Iowa, for instance, deer hunting, the popular ammunition is lead-based.
It's lead-based, yes.
And we all know what lead does, you know, to the environment. It's been taken out of gasoline. It's been taken out of paint. And so this is something that is just a little bit behind. It is a very well-performing ammunition. It's very easy to find. It can be very cheap. And so there's lots of reasons why hunters will choose lead ammunition. And just like you said, Angela, a lot of the folks who use this have no idea what it can do. And so there's this unintended consequence. When a hunter will go out and shoot a deer, it is completely acceptable to go ahead and field dress the deer and leave the remains in the field or the gut pile. And folks will do their very best to try to get all of the lead out of the gut pile. But when the lead projectile or lead slug hits the body of the deer, it fragments into many pieces. And some, we know this because we can x-ray a gut pile, and it's almost, I've heard it described as a snowstorm
of
fragments. And doesn't that just kind of give you a mental image of what it looks like?
Yeah, and that's a perfect mental image of it, because it's just like little tiny slivers on the x-ray, these bright spots on the x-ray that shows all that lead fragmentation. And, you know, depending upon the type of ammunition, that can actually fragment, that lead ammunition can actually fragment into over 400 pieces. And most of those, I'm going to call them microscopic, most of those are not able to be seen with the naked eye.
And folks just are not aware of this. And so some of it is inadvertently left in the environment. And who's going to come upon it first but scavengers?
Scavengers.
There's over 50 species of scavengers in Iowa that are affected by spent lead left in the environment, about 120 species nationwide. And one of those is our nation's symbol, the bald eagle. And so bald eagles are scavengers. A lot of folks don't even know that, don't realize that. And they'll come down and inadvertently consume some of this lead. Even a tiny piece of lead can be lethal to a bald eagle and to the other species of scavengers. And so let's take it back to the behavior change. We've created Iowa Hunters Leading the Way to partner with these conservation hunters and show them just how easy it is to switch to non-lead ammunition.
Right.
So there's our behavior change. But like you said, at the very beginning, we need to collect data. We need to get to know this community and who is doing the hunting and where are they buying the ammunition and what kind of firearms are they using. And, you know, all of those things that are really entrenched in tradition and was very interesting to delve deeper and to really meet the hunters in that community, which many of them were already our conservation partners with Plant Grow Fly and a lot of other projects. And so we talk about what behavior do we want to shift? Well, we're encouraging the shift to non-lead ammunition. So, Angela, tell us about some of the challenges that we learned about as far as what's making it hard for folks to switch.
I would say hard to say number one versus not number one, but each individual person is going to rank that a little differently as far as those challenges are concerned. But a huge barrier is accessibility of finding non-lead ammunition. Though we live, what I'm going to say, in the heart of deer hunting in the Midwest, it's not always easy to find that particular ammunition for your particular firearm. So that can be a large challenge just right there. And then once they do have, they've had accessibility or they've been able to find the particular ammunition that they need or think that they need for their firearm, being able to just practice with it and know how it shoots so that they can feel like they they can still go and have that good tradition of hunting that they want to be involved in and still be successful with it. So that's been another challenge or another kind of a road bump, if you will, roadblock. And then price for some is also a challenge. And so not only finding the ammunition, but finding the ammunition in a price point that they can feel comfortable with.
So non-lead ammunition is priced compared to premium
That's correct.
Premium lead, excuse me. Non-lead ammunition was actually designed as a premium performing ammunition. And
right.
So that's kind of where the price point falls. And when you were talking about that tradition of hunting, I think you were kind of alluding to the performance as well, because
correct.
Hunters really want to make sure that they have that lethal shot, that they're not wounding an animal that they then cannot follow and find.
Right.
And so that's really important that they have really great performance. And so they want to make sure that it works well in their firearm and it is a great match for their hunt and their equipment. And so these are all very specific challenges that through Iowa Hunters Leading the Way, we have addressed each challenge. We continue to try to address each challenge and get that information out to hunters of where they can buy it, how much it costs, and what kind of actual ammunition is available. But really, when you put all these things together, it really is a tradition, and that people just really are not used. They've always used lead. They have
right.
a whole bunch of it
yeah.
in their cabinet. Grandpa took them out. They've got, you know, the firearm that they've used for years. And so by just getting them out on the shooting range, having demonstrations, letting them try these different kinds of ammunition, we're getting over all of these challenges. And so I think that's a great example of how we've used all of these components of behavior change to try to make our program as efficient and effective as we possibly can.
Yep, that effectiveness is what we're trying for. And, you know, like a lot of behavior change, it's just not going to happen overnight. It's can be a bit of a long process because they need to understand those different challenges, and it may be completely new information for some people.
We've only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to skip. We were going to talk about Stomp the Straw. We'll talk about that next time on our show. I want to just end with a couple more, you know, really interesting points about behavior change. One interesting point is a kind of a keeping up with the Joneses concept.
Yes.
There's this really cool study in hotels where we've all seen that little sign that says, if you want to help the hotel save water and save the earth, please hang up your towel. And if you want us to wash it, please leave it on the floor. Well, I'm not going to get the percentages right, but maybe 50% or so of hotel stayers would go ahead and hang up the towel. They did a project where they would change the wording and say, you know, the majority of the people who stay at this hotel will hang up their towel to help save the earth.
And I'm going to interject, Jess. They actually found out that if that little card said the majority of the people who stayed in this room, bringing you even tighter to that community.
Exactly. Then the percentage of people who hung up the towel increased.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really goes to show that if you say, please do this behavior to save the earth, a certain amount of people will do it. But if you say, please do this behavior, and by the way, all of your counterparts and your colleagues and your neighbors
yep.
are doing this, many more people do it. There are certain ways that you can really find out about your project and find out what motivates people. And it is all about emotions. It's all about values. It's all about making it easy, giving people the tools where they can make a good choice for their family that's also a good choice for the earth. And that is the beauty of the science behind behavior change.
Yeah, and finding really good stories to build empathy with. Through behavior change science, it's shown that the brain actually attaches more to stories than to facts. So making sure we get good stories out there that people can attach to and really feel like they can walk away with some power.
I hope everyone thought this was very interesting. I certainly do. Please look up Impact by Design and check out our conservation programs on the zoo's website to find out how we've used the science of behavior change to help save animals in the wild.
And speaking of behavior change, why not try a trip to the zoo, right?
Exactly.
We're out of time for today, and we'll see you next time on Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.